Hey, so have you heard the rumor that the restaurant guys are introducing a call-in component to the show? Well, guess what? It's true. So if you have a question for the restaurant guys or something you'd like us to discuss on the air, call us at 732-828-9459. Call anytime from anywhere. We'll answer your questions and who knows, maybe even have you on one of our upcoming Restaurant Guys call-in shows. The number to call is 732-828-9459, 732-828-9459 from anytime or anywhere.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can reach us through WCTCAM or RestaurantGuysRadio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how are you?
I'm well indeed. I'm well indeed, and I want to share with the listeners today something that you did that really surprised even me, that you are such a well-prepared restaurateur. We were at a repast luncheon. The father of a friend of ours passed away, and after the funeral, they invited folks back to lunch, and this man was a very good man, and he had a lot more people showed up than maybe even the restaurant thought could possibly show up.
He was a little more popular, I think, than maybe his family knew.
And we were at this restaurant. It was a buffet. It was a lovely buffet, but there weren't enough chairs. When Mark Pascal says,
I have chairs in my car. Would you like me to bring them in?
And I said, why do you have chairs in your car? And he said, because I thought they might not have enough.
Because they thought they might need them.
So I
brought a dozen chairs to this event because I said, there's going to be, what I said was, I knew this man. I knew him very well. There's going to be more people at this than anybody's anticipating. And they were figuring 75 or 100, and they got closer to 200 people to come to the repast. Forget about the funeral and the rest. But
So Mark and I walked out and got the chairs out of the back of Mark's car. They were the Sidewalk Cafe chairs from Stage Left because it was the morning and we were closed. And we brought our own chairs into another restaurant.
BYOC, never That's done it before, and I probably will never do it again, but that, you know, sometimes you got to be prepared.
That's a first for me, pal.
I have to say it's a first
for me. You win with that one.
But, you know, it's funny. The gentleman who passed away, Gennaro Maleri was his name, and actually was his American name because it's funny. At the funeral, they were using his Filipino name. Was an immigrant from the Philippines. And this is something you only learned about me a week ago at the funeral, is Mr. Cheeks is how, and that's another story that we'll have to tell another day. Mr. Cheeks is what we called him, is the gentleman who introduced me to the restaurant business. And what he did is he worked at a place called Mayfair Farms up in West Orange. That was my very, very first restaurant job. And I said, you know, he said, come on, come work. Well, you know, you work some banquets. It's good money. It's fun. The people are great. And I said, but I don't have any restaurant experience. Do they need experience? He said, well, yes, they do need restaurant experience. But I've been through the interview process here enough times to know they're really only going to ask you like three questions. They're going to ask you where you worked. They're going to ask you, you know, what style of service have you done before and one other thing. So you're going to say you worked at the Manor, competing restaurant around the corner, which there is going to be the perfect answer. And you're going to say, well, I've never done French-style service before, but I can learn. And that was basically, they're going to ask you a few questions. And so I went in, and I pretended that I had worked in another restaurant.
And you didn't even know what French-style service
and
was.
And that's the fact of the matter.
But it was
is,
not a lie. It was true.
That part of it was true.
Both. You could learn. I've seen you do French service. You know. You learned.
Because I had no idea. French-style service is kind of where you come around with a butler tray and serve each person individually. Everything's not pre-plated onto plates. It's pre-plated onto trays, and then someone comes with two forks or two spoons or something like
that. Some serving utensil.
And plates.
Gives you each, your piece
gives
of steak.
You each of the things that you want, so that you can say, no, I'd like one a little more rare, or I'd like three little mini potatoes.
It doesn't matter. What matters is you didn't know what the hell you were talking about. That's what matters. And you got the job anyway.
And Mr. Cheeks got me my very first restaurant job by cluing me in on what the interview questions were going to be.
So we'd like to dedicate this show to Gennaro Malari from Nutley, New Jersey. That's
absolutely.
You know, I have a related story. From our restaurant recently, didn't go quite as well for someone employing the same strategy when I was interviewing them. You know, there, people feel that in the restaurant business, you know, as we've gotten more professional, I don't know, there's still a throwback to just thinking...
To 1984 when I was applying at the Mayfair Farms?
Bullshit doesn't fly anymore. I mean, it does in some places, but how do you walk into our place, get an interview with the owner, and think, you know what, I'm just going to bullshit this guy about wine. This guy probably doesn't know anything. And how do you think...
People do it all the time. They do it all the time. Mark, and I don't ask the same three questions at every interview.
Right, exactly. But this guy says to me, he got sort of fast-tracked up to me, because the way we do interviews at Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi is a member of the staff does the first interview. Then you come and you trail, which means you just basically take a look around and follow around, and we see, number one, if you like us, and number two, if you know how to, like, stay out of the way on a restaurant floor. You don't do any work. And at that point, if the whole staff that you've worked with wants you to join the team that they are, then it gets passed up to me or Mark, and we do an interview. Well, this guy had a lot of great experience, and he had supposedly worked with some of the most famous chefs in America. And so we said, you know what? Let's fast-track this guy, because if this is real, this could be a real find.
And know that the presumption is that we always presume that it's real.
You're telling the truth, right. Yeah. This guy worked with Norm Van Aken and all sorts of great chefs, and I said, all right, well, let's have the interview. And something just wasn't right. Like, somebody had given him, maybe he worked in some restaurants or had read some stuff, I don't know.
Right, worked in the same city.
Well, I mean, dined in that restaurant. But he knew some things, but he was exaggerating his knowledge or his facility with that knowledge. And here's what I don't understand why you would ever say this to a restaurant when you're sitting with the owner or the sommelier or the manager, and say, well, you know, I know a lot about wine. I ask a basic question. I said, and, you know, you don't need to know a lot about anything coming in. We teach people all the time. I know a lot about wine. I'm really good at selling wine. Now, he's telling me he's selling wine in these fine restaurants. And I said, well, so, like, what do you know? Tell me give me one of your favorite wines. Pretty easy question. That's what we call a lob. He's like, I don't know. I was like, okay, maybe you're choking. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Tell me about...
But remember... And remember, part of our interview process is this person going to choke?
Right, are you a choker?
If a customer asks them a question that they have moderate knowledge about.
So I say to the guy in another lab, pick a wine region and tell me something about it. Okay, Burgundy. What about Burgundy? And he says, you mean the Chateau Latour and the Chateau Neuf de Pape? I was like, no, one of those is a Bordeaux and the other one's from the Rhone. And now I realize that he's not choking. And I said, are you
sure? And again, it's totally okay to not know these things when you apply for a job.
But don't lie to me. And I said, are you sure you know a lot about wine? And I explained to him that you don't have to. And he's like, no. I know varieties. I know everything about varieties. Okay. What variety is Burgundy made from? Cabernet Sauvignon, Syrah, and Merlot.
Which are three incorrect answers.
That are not made in the same place anywhere but California. And I thought, oh, man, don't lie. So if I was hiring, you never would have gotten that first job, is what I'm saying, Mark. That's it.
It's okay. It wasn't that great a job.
Anyway, well, listen, talking about the increasing professionalism in our business, the CEO of Star Chefs, which is the most important and first online food magazine. They're having their International Chefs Congress here in New York on September 20th, 21st, and 22nd. And we have the CEO, Antoinette Bruno, joining us once again on The Restaurant Guys in just a minute. So stick with us. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and on restaurantguysradio.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and today our guest is Antoinette Bruno. Longtime listeners of the show will remember that Antoinette was on the show several years back. She is the CEO of Star Chefs, the first ever and probably the most successful online food magazine.
Hi, Antoinette. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Francis. Hi, Mark. How are you?
We're doing well. Mark's got a little bit of a sore throat today.
A little bit of frog. Kids' football season started yesterday, so.
Yeah, those kids are little petri. They're little petri dishes, aren't they?
No. That's just me yelling.
Oh. I got it.
You know the guy screaming on the sideline?
Yeah. Crazy me. Dad. There you are. Antoinette Bruno, Star Chefs was not as popular or as widely known and widely respected when you joined us so many years ago. The website itself overall has grown tremendously in the last 3 or 4 years. What's been going on with Star Chefs?
We have grown tremendously. We grow each and every year, which is a good thing, even in this economy. We've been busy this year working on our Rising Star events all over the country and our upcoming International Chef Congress, which our move-in is only like 3 days away.
All right. Now, I have a question to ask you, and I want to talk about the International Chefs Congress this year is coming up in a week or two in now, you know, people will listen to the podcast at different dates, but it's coming up on September 20th, 21st, and 22nd of 2010 here in New York City.
Maybe you should remind everybody what the Chef's Congress is, Antoinette.
Great. Well, the Chef's Congress is an incredible event where chefs come together from all over the country to share. Actually, they come from all over the world, the presenters. There are 91 presenters this year, and they come to share their ideas, their techniques, their recipes, what's going on in their restaurants with 1,500 to maybe this year as much as 2,000 of their chef peers. It's really an incredible event where one gets to learn from someone else that does exactly what they do. And in this environment, in being able to learn from your buddy in the next restaurant is really important to the survival, to the success of your restaurant.
Well, you know, I think that the food press for a long time, both the food press for consumers and the industry press, which a lot of folks read, has really helped to spread new techniques, new trends. There's a lot of collaboration, I think, among chefs. But Star Chefs, you really become a linchpin of a lot of conversation among chefs. From around the world. I mean, when was your first Chef's Congress? Was that 5 years ago?
5 years ago. This is our fifth annual International Chef's Congress. It's our 30th Rising Stars, and it's our 15th year in business.
Now, how do you go from, and this, we spoke about 5 years ago, and I'm really curious to talk to you about how you go from this little website called Star Chefs, which is kind of cool, and industry insiders sort of knew about it when we spoke last, and many of our peers in the industry knew about this great little website, but it was not a central, method of communication for chefs. You've gone on to become an extremely influential website. How do you do that? How do you go from nowhere to mattering in the food world the way that Star Chefs has?
I think one part of our success is that we actually go to restaurants. We are a staff of, I guess now there are 24 people sitting out in my office, and there are six of us who travel around the country, around the world, and actually visit chefs, interview them, taste their food, take photos of their food, and then report back what we see on StarChef.com. And if you look at all the other food publications out there, most of them are made up of a network of freelancers that hand in an interesting story that catches a freelancer's idea of something that they saw. There's not a central body that's actually doing the traveling around the country or around the world that is seeing it with a critical eye and sees what happens in San Francisco and what happens in Boston and what happens in Madrid and what happens in Tokyo and actually can compare it across the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the key ingredients that we bring to the table. And I think the other key ingredient that sort of differentiates Star Chefs is that we're not afraid to have an opinion. And we're not afraid to actually, shout that opinion. And we don't critically review restaurants, but when we see something good or bad that we think is fantastic, we want to shout so that everybody else can learn from it.
I think that one of the things that's striking about your newsletter, your weekly newsletter, is for me, there's so much that comes now to me every week. that most of it gets deleted, but yours doesn't. I mean, to what do you attribute that? I mean, I think that you get read a lot, and I think that you get a lot of feedback from the industry. How do you?
I appreciate that.
Well, yeah, I do the same. We send out an email to about 7,000 to 10,000 people every week as well. And when people say, "Oh, I saw your newsletter," and I always say, "Well, thank you for not deleting me," you know, because you know all our inboxes are get really full. But I think that Starshift.
That's true.
I think that Starshift provides some useful information, and I at least. I mean, I don't read it cover to cover, but I at least scan it because I find cool stuff in there that's not necessarily from you, but from some other chef or some other mixologist.
Right. Because that's what we do. We report on what we see.
Well, now, I want to touch on the fact that it's not just chefs. You talk about wine and you talk about cocktails.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, it seems, Antoinette, since the last we spoke, that area of your organization has grown quite a bit.
Because it's grown as part of the bottom line of a restaurant. I mean, this year and last year, 2008, 2009, 2010, sort of since the recession started, sometimes the bar accounts for 70 to 80% of a restaurant's profits.
Really? We didn't know that. We're just kidding. Of course we knew that.
But, I mean, that's a big deal. And I think a lot of people, you know, thought of the bar as, you know, well, just something that you have to have because you have to serve a cocktail when somebody asks for it. But what's really happened in the last couple of years is that chefs have as much embraced the cocktail trends as mixologists have.
Well, you know, you just alluded to something, Antoinette. You know, there are dozens and dozens of seminars in the upcoming Chef's Congress. But it seemed to me there were a lot more focus on the business of running a restaurant, not just the creative side of being a chef. Is that a function of the economy or what made you have, you know, several seminars in that?
Well, there's a lot of reasons for that. One, we're growing as an institution and we're learning too. And I think as we grow with our rising stars, the first rising stars was 8 years ago, and it was in Boston. And those rising stars from 8 years ago are now multi-unit operators. Dante the Magistris has several restaurants in Boston. You can literally go around the country and look at our rising stars back in that 2002 and 2003 classes. And these are, you know, well-respected multi-unit operators. And they also thirst for information about running their businesses and how they can run a high-quality fine dining or upscale casual restaurant, you know, and be in more than one place at one time. And so we have grown and expanded the Congress to address those kinds of issues. We have Rich Millman coming this year, and we have a whole session where you can sit and pick the brain, you know, of the guy who created Let Us Entertain You.
I thought that was a fascinating opportunity. It was a fascinating opportunity to talk to successful businessmen. And this, I want to stress that this Star Chefs, Chef's Congress, which is coming up, is really for the industry. I mean, I think that a lot of things that a lot of food and wine festivals are geared to consumers or geared to a hybrid of consumers and professionals. And this is, I think that a lot of consumers would find, you know, would find some of this stuff not very interesting at all, you know, because it's about the profession of being in the restaurant business.
The nuts and bolts of it.
Correct.
Well, now, when we come back, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I do want to talk about the Rising Stars program, but I want to go back to something we touched on earlier. I want to talk about the focus on beverage, on wine, and especially, you know, the exciting and expanding and increasing field of mixology and bartending and how that works with the idea of a Chef's Congress. We'll be back in just a moment talking more with Antoinette Bruno from Star Chefs. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of The Restaurant Guys Radio Show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's the Restaurant Guys again with Mark and Francis. Our guest is Antoinette Bruno. She is the CEO of Star Chefs. Star Chefs is having their International Chefs Congress here in New York on September 20th, 21st, and 22nd. Their website is available all year round, and it's primarily an industry networking and industry information sharing site. It's been very successful. One of the things I would like to talk about, or what I'd like to talk about now, Antoinette, is mixology. It's near and dear to my heart. And actually, you probably don't even know this, but there's a presentation, a mixology workshop being given by a gentleman named Don Lee, who's a great mixologist and a friend of ours, on the Wednesday of the Chef's Congress. And he's asked me to come and present with him. So I'm actually going to be presenting at your Chef's Congress.
I did not know that.
I just snuck in. You know, my friend Don called me. He's doing a seminar on infusions and fat washing, which is a really cool mixological technique. And I had given a seminar at the – Mark and I together had given a seminar at the Manhattan Cocktail Classic in the spring that Don helped us put together. And he said, you know, come and talk about your kind of infusing with our infusing. So we'll be there. You'll see the Restaurant Guys.
Awesome.
So if you're in the industry and you're listening and you want to go to the seminar where we'll just be helping our friend Don, it's on Wednesday from 11:30 to 12:45, and it's called Bringing Home the Bacon, Fat Washing, and Other Infusions. And the presenter is listed as Don Lee, and I'll be the little elf in the corner showing my little stuff at the end.
Now, Antoinette, You've changed things very slightly this year. You've provided an opportunity to let a very small number of consumers, of people who are not in the industry, to kind of get a backstage pass to what's going on at the Chef's Congress. Can you talk about how they would do that?
Yes, you can go on to starchefs.com/ICC, and you can select a consumer pass. There's only going to be 50 of these, so 50 consumers are going to be selected to attend. And that's going to happen over the next couple of days. And it's a great opportunity to get up close and personal with these extraordinary chefs, pastry chefs, sommeliers, and mixologists. They can watch the pastry competition that takes place every morning, or the sommelier slam that's taking place every day at lunchtime, which are also two new events this year. We've sort of gotten a little bit on the bandwagon of competitions and are sort of dipping our toe into the competitive world. We've found that with the advent of Top Chef and Iron Chef and even the Bocuse d'Or becoming very popular in the United States with fine dining chefs, that the fine dining world is actually interested in competing.
Well, let's face it, we restaurant people are super competitive anyway, and we love to beat the next guy at what we're doing.
You know, it used to be a dirty word, competing with fine dining chefs.
And then it started to make a lot of money. and then it wasn't a dirty word anymore. I will tell you that I do think I think we are too focused on competitions, and I think that there's no stopping that right now.
But I'm going to disagree a little bit with Francis. I think in the name of good fun, it's totally fine. But I think what Francis is talking about is, you know, is this particular thing better than this particular thing we're very focused on right now? But I think it's all in the name of good fun, and I think you have chefs, especially when you're putting together chefs that are already very well respected. We know they're very talented. We know they're really good at their jobs. You're not saying that, you know, you're not good at your job and you are good at your job. You're saying, you know what, on this particular day you did a little better than
but what I'm really excited about is, you know, we've been talking a little bit about the mixology and wine as being, you know, a very big focus of our magazine, is I can't wait to see these buttoned up sommeliers have to run and grab wine off a shelf and pair a dish, you know, that they've never had before, and sort of do it all in 5 minutes. There's going to be four sommeliers that have to pair three courses to an audience of their peers, to an audience of sommeliers. And
you know,
I can't wait to see this.
You know, I do think that sounds like a lot of fun, and I'm probably going to attend a couple of these things and take a look at them, but I have to say, and I think that Star Chefs must have these, because they engage people, they start a conversation. But I just think that You know, and we've had Calicchio from Top Chef on, and Top Chef Masters, and we've had they have a role, they have a place. But I just think that we spend too much time overall now looking at who can do this better than the other person. And I think that, you know, I don't know, I sitting down and learning, as you have so many opportunities to do at Star Chefs and in life, and saying, well, what do you do? And not really putting it up against something else. I think in the wine world we did that as well. I think in the wine world, Americans really embraced the wine world when Robert Parker popularized the 100-point scale. So we started the conversation with, this is better than that, or that's better than this, or this is better for that, but it's a little less expensive because it's not quite as good, but it's how many points? And I just, you know, I know that Mark and I maybe feel a little differently on this one.
A lot differently. Lighten up.
I don't know. I think that what excites me about Star Chefs and what excites me about the opportunity to come together with people like this is to...
The sharing.
Is to have a conversation, not a contest. But I'm going to go.
That is what the Congress is all about. It is all about sharing. It's about seeing your friends that you haven't seen, you know, because now then maybe they work across the country or across the world. It's about learning about what's going on in their restaurants and the troubles that they're having and how they're overcoming them. That is what the Congress is all about.
All right, so let's talk about Antoinette, because you're the head of this staff, and you do travel all around the world and look at what's going on and put these things together. What are the trends that you're seeing? What are the exciting developments? Let's not talk about people. Let's talk about the exciting developments, products, and trends that you're seeing happen from your perspective as CEO of Star Chefs.
There's a lot of interesting things happening this year. I mean, I guess we started off the year sort of keeping in the whole sort of comfort food, kind of coming out of the recession, or maybe sort of still in the midst of the recession, but everybody was all about pizza and pasta, and that was kind of the big trend that we sort of started the year or continued the year with. But since then, sort of cropping out of that, we've had the whole do-it-yourself or the DIY chef trend, which is everybody, you know, doing everything from making their own charcuterie to making their own tinctures to making their own bread to, you know, sort of anything that could be done in-house, taking it in-house and doing it. And that's, you know, from a cost perspective, from a creativity perspective, from a survival perspective. I think that has been sort of the house-made trend has been a really big issue. It's nearly double from a year ago. So we do our trend survey every year, and three-quarters of the people that responded to our trend survey this year said that they were doing things house-made. They had taken processes that they normally had outsourced and were now making it in-house, and that's double from a year ago.
Antoinette, do you think we're going to see any movement away from the what I'll call, I guess, a race to the inexpensive? Francis and I have seen even great restaurants just moving in ways to try and make themselves less expensive in any way they can. And I think in some ways that's come up with some really cool stuff where people are doing things in-house. But in other ways, maybe they're cutting corners that they shouldn't be cut.
Things are being sacrificed along the way.
Well, I think that you have to sort of listen to your customer. And if your customer is saying, I can't afford a $150 tasting menu, it needs to be $75, then you've got to figure out how to deliver a $75 tasting menu. I mean, you have basically the pharmaceuticals, the Wall Street, the advertising expense accounts of yesteryear are gone. And you have a certain dining group that can afford an expensive tasting menu, and then you have the rest of the world.
Right,
and
right.
I think you have to figure out how to deliver a quality product for a lower price. So I don't think cross-cutting's going away. I think I think the better chefs are coming up with more creative ways to produce a quality product for a $50 tasting menu or a $75 tasting menu. Or the people that keep extending restaurant week all year long and having $20 tasting menus. You know, I think it's a necessary, shift. And I don't think it's a temporary shift. I think the diner has fundamentally changed.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think one of the ways that Francis and I have seen in the places that have done it successfully is people have moved to very tasty alternate cuts of animals where they were, you know, you were eating porterhouses and rib steaks and cuts like that for a very long time, and now you've moved into maybe cuts that take a little bit more technique to work with, but
right.
but are a little less expensive when
all
you purchase
cuts
them.
Are definitely a big way for a restaurant to save money, and offcuts can be incredibly tasty. The whole sort of nose to tail cooking is definitely prevalent throughout the country. People are it's cheaper to take in a whole animal and use every bit of it than it is to just buy, you know, the best cuts of the animal and pay top dollar for it. So I think that's part of this whole house-made trend is if you take in a whole animal, you got to figure out how to use it.
And in some dishes, the sausage tastes better than the pork chop.
Totally.
Yeah.
You know, and we have a whole workshop on blood and the use of blood this year at the Congress. And then Norman Lapreece is doing a whole workshop from La Toque in Montreal. He's doing a head-to-tail workshop with a pig.
I actually
and
saw
using
that.
Every ounce of the pig in an hour and 15 minutes.
That's wild. Well, you know, to talk about making stuff in-house, though, I think that it sort of works well. The making things in-house really sort of works well with the idea of cutting costs. But the making things in-house, in addition to using the whole animal, whole animal butchery that's been going on, you know, I think this is one of the areas where we talked about earlier how the bartenders and chefs are sort of working together in the term bar chefs, you know, and it's funny, you're talking about mm-hmm. the International Chefs Congress, and I see a number of seminars being given by people who are talking about what goes on behind the bar. And Albert Trummer was a guy, he's the first guy who coined the phrase bar chef when he was at Town, a restaurant in Manhattan, oh, God, 6-7 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Longer than that. Sorry, you're
is
really
it longer
old.
Than that?
Yeah,
well, I'm
sorry.
An old guy. As far as making things in-house goes, we've been a big proponent of that for a long time. And it started, to my mind, when people who were interested in historical cocktails couldn't find, simply weren't available historical ingredients, and so we started making them ourselves. And then it went on to be, well, you know, we make our own grenadine, we make our own velvet falernum, we put up a lot of fruit ourselves. And I think something people are realizing now is when you go to a restaurant, especially in the bar, where, look, you're using a lot of the liquors that other people are using as well. And those liquors come in a bottle, and they're not perishable.
And they're exactly the same.
And you need
exactly
to differentiate yourself.
Exactly. And you differentiate yourself as a mixologist, as a bartender, because you can have a Jack Rose, which is a cocktail made with Applejack from Laird & Company, which is a New Jersey company. A little shout-out to the Jersey company. And grenadine. But you can't have a Jack Rose like we have at Catherine Lombardi anywhere else, because we make that grenadine. And
right.
That doesn't mean it's better or worse. Again, going back to my earlier comment, you know, it doesn't mean that if you go to PDT that Jim Meehan's Jack Rose is any better or worse than mine, but he has a grenadine and I have a grenadine, and they're different, and the world's
and
a better place.
So it tastes completely different than the cocktail.
And the world's a better place for that, and my bar mm-hmm. has more to contribute because of that, I
and
think.
And Jim Meehan's doing the session on the logic of liquors.
Yeah,
and
Jack
Cannon from Eastern Standard in Boston is doing an entire session on house-made, and house-made everything behind the bar.
Yeah.
Bitters, vermouths, tinctures, everything you can possibly imagine.
Well, I just want to pick on Francis for a second, though. But wouldn't you say the Jack Rose that's made with the homemade grenadine is going to be better than the one that's made with corn syrup from whatever major manufacturer produced it?
Yes, indeed, I would. But But that's not even a contest we're thinking about. The question is, do you have to say is Jim Meehan's Jack Rose better than mine? And the answer is, of course it is. But that's not important either. That's not really important either. Anyway, we'll be back in just a second with Antoinette Bruno from Star Chefs, and I want to get some more details and give them to you, our listeners, on the Chefs Congress, which is coming up in New York. You should sign up for it. You can find, if you're in the industry, you can find out more about it at starchefs.com. And if you're a consumer, you can be one of the few lucky people to get invited as well. And we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and restaurantguysradio.com. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis again with Antoinette Bruno of StarChefs.com, StarChefs International Chefs Congress coming up. Aside from the International Chefs Congress and the weekly newsletter you guys do, you have an awards program that has actually become pretty important. You know, it's funny. Mark and I get... There are all sort of different levels of awards. There's James Beard Awards that are very important. And we get stuff in the mail all the time saying, you know, you've just been elected the best restaurant in New Jersey by, you know, the who's who of New Jersey. Send us $400 and we'll give you a plaque. but Star Chefs, this, you know, your Rising Stars program has really garnered a lot of respect in the industry. Why don't you tell us about how it started and who is a rising star? What's the point, and where do you select them from? It's a different city every year, or is it from around the country?
We do four cities every year, and it's Rising Stars is our way to celebrate the young talent that is really making a difference in the industry. We started the awards literally 8 years ago, and it, to really recognize the young chefs who are actually in the kitchens cooking. I used to go to the James Beard Awards every year, and the same people would win every single year, and it used to drive me crazy. One day I sort of came into my office and I said, you know, we are going to start our own awards. We're going to call them Rising Stars, and we are specifically going to focus on young culinary talent that are just out there. They're the chef de cuisines. They're the brand new executive chefs of their first restaurant, and we are going to look for chefs that can see beyond the four walls of their restaurant, that are going to be the future leaders, the future Daniel Blues, the future Morimoto's, the future John George's, that are really going to make a difference in the industry and lead the future of food. And that's what we've done for the last 8 years. We are celebrating our 30th Rising Stars, and you know it's going to be in New Jersey coming up. It's a week from this Wednesday. It's September 22nd at Maritime Park, which is on Liberty State Park. And it's going to be our 30th Rising Stars, where we are honoring the top up-and-coming talent in the New York area.
By the way, Liberty State Park is up in Jersey City with a beautiful view of Manhattan. You should check it out. It's a beautiful place to go. And there's a gala that evening, right?
Yes, that's our awards gala. And each of the chefs that have won Rising Stars in New York for this year will be serving a dish which we at Star Chefs have selected as their signature dish. And the menu is incredible. The chefs are incredible. We can talk about some of them if we have some time.
Well, let's set up the parameters here. Now, this is an event that's open to the public, or
it's completely open to the public. And you buy a ticket and you come.
And it's like $7,000 for dinner. Is that what the price is?
No, it's like $100.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah, it's not that expensive. And when you think about it, you can eat 20 different dishes with 20 different wine pairings. It's a bargain.
That is a bargain.
These are not, you know, your average dishes.
I'm going to clarify for both of you guys. It's $165 a person.
It's $165.
Yeah, you guys got to read your own stuff.
Is this a sit down gala dinner?
It's not a sit down. I don't believe that you can effectively serve a large group of people in a sit down dinner with really good food. So instead, what we do is each chef has a station, and they literally cook to order at their table.
Wow.
So it's a la minute. They're making a fresh dish, and you're literally getting it right out of the pan.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun.
And what night is that?
It's Wednesday night, September 22nd. At Maritime Park,
and
some of the restaurants that are being represented by the chefs who've won are like Justin Bogle at Gilt, Mark Forgione of Mark Forgione, Jason Hall of Gotham Bar and Grill, Emma Hurst at Sorella, Dan Kluger at ABC Kitchen, and then this chef I'm positive you've never heard of, and you should hear of him if you haven't, is Masato Nishihara of Kajitsu. That is a chef whose name you're going to hear a lot about in the future. James Tracy of Kraft, Brandon Kita of Asiat, Bobby Helen of Resto, who's also one of these head-to-tail, nose-to-tail chefs. Marcus Glucker of Gordon Ramsay at the London. There's three pastry chefs that have won. There's a sommelier that have won that's pairing all of the dishes with a very specific wine that's located right there next to the chef's table. So you pick up the dish, you pick up the wine pairing. And then, of course, there are also rising star mixologists. There's Brad Farron of the Clover Club and Jason Luttrell of Dram. It's an incredible event.
And these are the guys who've won the award that are preparing the food.
That's correct. So they already know they've won. You can read about all of them on Star Chefs. You can read their bios. You can look at their our favorite dishes. We have a whole article called Why They Shine, why each one of these chefs was incredible. You know, just to pick out a couple that are probably sort of unsung or not known, the Emma Hurst at Sorella. This is I think she's 23 years old. She's an executive chef. She's already got her own restaurant and more projects underway. And she cooks very super authentic Piedmontese cooking. That is, it just satisfies the soul. She's incredible.
And let's look historically. I mean, your rising stars of yesteryear have gone on to become some pretty cool chefs. Who are the most famous alum of the Star
Most
chefs.
Famous alums of Rising Stars. Let's see, Wiley Dufresne, WD-50. At the Modern, Jonathan Benno at Per Se. Oh, Gabrielle Cruther at the Modern. Let's see. God, there's been so many. I think there are 400 Rising Stars now all across the country.
So you're really not messing around at all.
No. And some of these young kids today in this Rising Stars, you know, I talked about, you know, Emma Hurst. This young kid, Bobby Helen at Resto, he's incredible. I mean, his charcuterie is absolutely amazing. Or Mark Forgione. Here's a kid who has, you know, the whole family legacy thing. And he's got a... He has truly proven that being a culinary star isn't about family legacy, but it's about risk-taking. His food's incredible. He has this, it's whimsical, it's an imaginative, this one dish that he served me that I can still taste in my mouth. And I had it over 6 months ago. He did this whole roasted baby halibut with a Romanesco sauce with cauliflower puree. And something he calls sauce proposal.
What the heck is that?
It's so good. It's got it's brown butter. It has soy sauce in it. It has capers in it. It's the kind of thing that you want to lick off of every finger. It's so seductive.
And I think that we must end the show on this very sexual note right now because it may not come along again. Antoinette, thank you for coming to join us and talk to us today.
Thank you for having me, and make sure you get your Rising Star tickets at www.starchef.com/risingstars.
Great. Check it out. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and restaurantguysradio.com.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't, based on lighting. Lights on Nine is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on Nine supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on Nine has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on Nine, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys.
Francis, that Rising Chefs program is a really cool program because it recognizes people who I think really don't get recognized until, wouldn't otherwise get recognized until later in their career. So I think it's a really cool program. One little thing about it though, we really don't stand a chance in hell of ever winning, because one of the things that she said is, you know, it's about young talent. And I think the kindest thing you could say about the two of us is we're old talent.
Yeah, it's true. Well, you know, it's a different position. I'm amazed with the inclusion of mixologists now in all of these awards, mm-hmm. and the bartender was ignored for the first 15 years of our career.
And the re-inclusion of sommeliers, because I think for a long time sommeliers were included in a lot of these things. Then they were. Then there seems to have been kind of a dead period where the sommelier was almost regarded as the snooty guy who tasted wine for you. And now that person's been re-included again.
I think for a long time the wine professionals were considered in a separate category. The wine professionals always said, you always had the International Court of Master Sommeliers and the Institute of Masters of Wine. Mm-hmm. And the Society of Wine Educators, but wine wasn't seen as a part of food. And now I think there's more of a recognition that it's all part of the same animal.
That's exactly what I was just about to say. Antoinette hit on this earlier. A restaurant is kind of a big, a group of people and skills, and you need all of those skills in order to have a great restaurant. And they have to work together, and more as you see the world changing, you need those people to be able to work together and integrate each of their skills and skill sets so that it can all come together.
Well, and it's also about our cultural heritage, because the cuisine of our country or whatever country, because you know what, even when you have an Italian restaurant in the United States, it's part of whatever cuisine it's inspired by, but it's also in the United States. And the cuisine, the whole culture of cuisine is about what you eat and drink, and the whole, and cocktails play a part in that in Western cuisine, and wine does, and food does, and it's great to see it all come together. So I'm going to go to some of these events as well, although I'll be presenting at the Chef's Congress on Wednesday in the morning on the fat washing seminar. My name's not on there, but if you want to come and see the restaurant guys, we'll check us out, and hopefully we'll see you there. Hope you've enjoyed this last hour as much as we have. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and restaurantguysradio.com.